Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
You need some coffee.
At this point in the pandemic, I read an article a while back that says because of all the hormones and stuff going through our bodies, like our bodies have been on high alert for a year.
Oh, I see.
And it just does not let up. All of us are experiencing mild cognitive decline. I was like, this makes sense. I feel dumber.
Your name is Ben. Let me just help you out.
Okay, thank you. My name is Ben Sternke.
Ben, I don't
know. I'm one of your co-hosts today.
I don't know what
those
you
other
think
two
this.
Voices. I was on a roll, Matt.
Oh, sorry. You did.
I
have
was
to
on a smart roll.
Crank it up there.
All of my thoughts were in a row, and they were coming out in a way that I think was intelligible.
All right. So, well, I know you had a running start, and I ruined it.
Yep. So here we go again. Hi, I'm Ben Sternke. I'm one of your co-hosts for today on the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Those two other voices that you just heard were Christy Penley. Christy, hi, how are you?
Hey, hey.
And Matt Tebbe. Matt, good
the
to see you.
The Human Torch could good not to... secure a bank loan. I'm just getting my mouth
yeah,
ready to
like,
talk.
Yeah, the random sentences. The Human Torch.
My word.
How did you come up with that sentence?
That's from Anchorman,
is that a
you
standard?
Guys. That's Ron Burgundy, is what he says.
Wow.
A Human Torch could not secure a bank loan. I can see him saying that. That's good. Well, good. Well, glad to be here with y'all. Matt, well, we have reader email. We have listener email. Yeah?
Yeah, speaking of mild cognitive decline. No,
let's
I'm just
open
kidding.
Up the mailbag.
No, we get messages all the time from listeners, and we just don't read it. And I thought, I'm going to ask this person if
no,
I can read
it.
No,
we read it. We don't read it online.
Oh, yes, Christy.
We don't read
you.
It out
just
loud.
To clarify, any of you sent us a message, we care.
We just delete them. Okay, oh, this is from a listener? Delete.
The mild cognitive decline is teetering on
poor
to
listener.
Moderate.
We love you.
Medium,
we love you,
medium
listener.
To moderate. Yes, listeners.
No,
you're
we don't
favorite.
Read it out loud, but we're trying to become
we're
a
going
more
to today.
So I was thinking, you know what? I should ask Heather if I can read this, and that will help us become a more professional podcast. And then the last 2.5 minutes of the clown show. Here we go.
At least you better read this to get us back to zero.
All our best efforts to become a real boy.
A real podcast. Yes.
So Heather is a friend of ours, and she listens to the podcast. We've actually tackled her husband. We tackled one of his questions once. We tackled her husband. Jeez.
Wow.
So if you'd like us to tackle your husband, send us a message.
If he's just running around randomly and needs to be just brought to his senses.
The human torch could not tackle Heather's husband. He sent us a question that we tackled his question on the Patreon podcast, the Practitioner podcast, the other one. Right. But this one, she sends me this message. She says, I'm reading a book called, quote, Hunt, Gather, Parent.
I've heard of this.
Ancient cultures can teach us about the lost art of raising happy, helpful little humans, which, by the way, I'm loving. It's challenging my Western perspectives on parenting in so many ways, and it's witty and so true when it comes to the ways parenting is hard. Anyway, the author recounts spending 8 weeks with her toddler, living in three different places around the world, one of which was with a Maya family. As she described the culture of parenting there, she described it as not a child-centered culture, but one in which the adults invite their children into doing life with them, learning about life as they cook, work, and be with their parents. And the point is to teach the children cooperation and helpfulness, not obedience. Hmm. The children are given a ton of autonomy and aren't typically forced to help with anything. And they often grow up being motivated to help on their own without being asked as they grow. And Heather says this, I've heard a lot about autonomy on Gravity Leadership podcast discussions, that God doesn't force us to love or follow him, but gives us a choice and offers invitations. And I realize that autonomy in God always baffles me a little bit. I forget that this is true. So the similarity of the way this culture seems to parent and how God parents and loves us struck me, that God invites us to participate in his kingdom life, but doesn't force us, that he always allows us to work alongside him no matter what our maturity level. I'm hoping, as I try to live this way more with my kids, that I'll understand more of what God is like.
Wow.
And I thought, first of all, Heather, brilliant observation. Mm-hmm. The book, again, is called Hunt, Gather, Parent, When Ancient Cultures Can Teach Us About the Lost Art of Raising Happy, Helpful Little Humans. But I'm curious, like, what struck you, Christy, from Heather's little observation there?
I was struck by when she talked about the kids not just growing or learning immediate obedience, but they're really growing and learning in character, which is really what we want, right? As a parent, I want to be a parent who invites my kids in and they grow. And it's not just, hey, do this and do that. Although, if I'm honest, sometimes like I'm like, get in the car. But you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, sometimes. Really, my heart is... Yeah. For character, and that's kind of what I hear she's learning.
Yeah, yeah,
yep,
yeah. I'm struck by that as well. That there's, I think, oftentimes like get your shoes on, get in the car. Like, is this proxy goal? Like, what we want is for our kids to be wanting to participate in the life of the family, which means I'll get my shoes on and get in the car now. But we oftentimes settle for obedience as a proxy goal. Like, all I'm interested in is for you to do the thing that I just said to do. Rather than kind of losing, I think it's easy to lose sight of that larger goal. So that's just from the parenting standpoint. And I think Heather's observation is really profound. And it names, I think, some of the ways that I, even in my like ministry in leading others, some of the ways that I have to lean into that aspect of God's character in order to lead well without coercion or without sort of demanding obedience from the people that I'm leading, you know, and instead of saying like, actually your freedom is maintained and there's this invitation to cooperate with God together as a community.
Yeah. So. And you just touched on the thing that struck me, Ben, is that also Heather was emphasizing sort of the relational aspect of what, like there's a joining together with the parent in something that's not focused on the child. So this is the common life we share. You participate in this common life with me. And as you do, like we're joined together because we're not focused necessarily on each other. So there's so much in this that I feel like I lacks in the modern nuclear family. Like I don't really know. Our kids have chores. And sometimes they help us cook dinner or clear the table. They do that every day. But in terms of like a common mission we have as a family, like we're basically just running the family business to make sure the kids get in school and get to bed and get clean. And it's like very much, this is what the kid's doing, and how do I help the kid do the thing the kid's doing? Mm-hmm. And I'm just struck, like, I long for more joining with my children, doing things that aren't focused on them. Which, by the way, as a pastor, as a priest, I'm also looking in my church. I'm looking for ways to join with the people in my church and invite them into something that isn't focused on them, you know, but is focused on God's mission. Heather, thank you for that. If you come across books or podcasts or anything that you just want to share on email, we won't read your email without getting your permission, I promise. but it really is helpful for us, and I think it allows the community to hear from other people that, and they know, hey, there's more than just me listening, and there's a lot of us benefiting from what you're learning. Today on the podcast, we have part two of our conversation with Gino Curcuruto. When we first talked to him about his experience at Church of Boost, we didn't know there'd be a part two, but there needed to be. And so we chat with Gino about what he's learned from sharing his story. And a lot of that has to do with some of you listeners who interacted with Gino via email, on social media, and even some of you calling and texting him. So, this is part two of our convo with Gino. Gino, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Matt. Thank you. Yep. Hi, Christy. Hi, Ben.
Hey, here too. We're here too as well.
Yes, we are.
We are.
This Gino Curcuruto's voice, you heard him several weeks back. We hosted a conversation where Gino shared some of his story. We've been talking about...
Maybe you heard him if you're a constant listener to every single episode of our podcast. But I will say, I'll just interrupt you, Matt. I apologize. Thank you. But I will say, if you haven't heard the first episode with Gino... go back and listen to it. This is a reflection on some things that have happened since then. So it might make more sense if you listen to it. But this episode might be very edifying, even if you haven't listened to it. Caveats, disclaimers. Anyway,
you want to go? Okay.
No, it's fine.
There's the intro, everybody.
Well, I mean, that was good. I just wanted to let people know you may have not heard the first episode of
it. Can we just restart this intro?
Sure. Well, let's restart it. Yeah. We'll edit all of this out. I promise.
Let's restart the intro because I was in the process of describing where this podcast landed.
I'm a little punchy today.
Yep.
I apologize.
I see it. I see you. All right. Gino, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Matt. It's good to be back.
We're not going to edit any of that
out. Welcome back. Ben and Christy are with us too. Hey, guys.
Hey, hey.
Hi, guys.
I know the Midwest is guys, Philly. How do you respond? How do you talk about a plural group of people in Philly?
Oh, we say yous.
Yous.
But I haven't been able to pull this off, but I've heard on the street, there's a plural of yous where you say youses. It's not possessive. It's actually plural.
So I'd say
youses.
I don't have that depth.
Extra large group?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe?
It's like all y'all. This is where the South has just got it. Yeah. They just say y'all, and it's totally fine. All perfect. Y'all.
There is perfect. All y'all, too. Yeah, which is like, it's a group. It's a whole group of groups or something.
Somehow that
like,
sounds perhaps. Better than uses.
Oh, it totally does.
Well, hopefully all y'all have recognized Gino's voice. We talked to him several weeks back about an experience he had in a local church. We're just sharing stories about power, focusing on race and gender and how... power plays out in the local church. If you haven't heard the interview with Gino, this follow-up conversation we're having today will make a lot more sense if you've heard that. So we'll put the link in the show notes to that conversation. But Gino, we had your conversation. We shared it. You shared it on social media. And I told you this already, and I'll just share that with our listeners. The amount of comments you got on this interview we did with you several weeks ago was the most we've ever gotten on a podcast interview, ever, on social media. Why do you think your story elicited such a large response?
That's a really good question. First, I need to confess my naivete in this, because I'm not sure. I mean, I think from talking to people, I believe that it resonates with a lot of people's experiences. And yeah. I personally was not prepared for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a confession for everybody because I already confessed to you, Gino. We released the episode. I noticed all these comments. I noticed you having to respond to people. There was one sort of jerk face that was arguing with you about yes. your experience, and a bunch of people jumped in, including me. And then it dawned on me as I'm sort of telling him, "Hey, don't tell somebody who has experienced church abuse that they haven't experienced church abuse." It dawned on me the amount of emotional and spiritual work it took for you to not only share your story, but then have to become sort of the, people coming to you to share their stories and kind of dump their emotional weight on you. And so yeah. I just was like, "Hey, man, I'm sorry I haven't followed up with you, haven't checked in with you to see how you're doing." And you're like, "Yeah, it's been rough."
Yeah, like I think, I appreciate that, Matt. And I know that this might be the first time the listeners are hearing that, yeah. but you did that quickly after, and I appreciate your care for me in that. I think that it caught me off guard in the sense that I was so prepared for the detractors. I was mm-hmm. I'm so prepared for, Frank, who we're calling him, mm-hmm. to do something mm-hmm. because it's happened every other time that I've had to talk to anyone about it. I've had some rumors or something happen. So I was prepared for that. And the person on social media who pushed back, that doesn't really bother me. I don't know. Maybe it should, but it doesn't really bother me. Mm-hmm. I was not prepared for how many people would feel that this was something that now they can share and they mm-hmm. wanted to share with me. I'm not saying that that's bad. I'm happy to listen. I want yeah. to listen to more. I want more people to share. But I wasn't prepared for what that weight would do to me. And I didn't make room in my schedule to care for myself in that process. And I kept listening to these stories where people were sharing for maybe some of them for the first time. Mm. And I felt like I have this responsibility to steward this, and I'm not really sure I know how. Mm. And I need to learn in the next 48 hours because this is amping up.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so... What is it about? What was it about? Why do you think people shared that with you? I mean, some people don't even know you, right? Yeah. Many people are right. strangers. What was it about? Why do you think they felt free to talk to you about it?
Hmm. I think that there's something about. I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like any way I answer that question is going to sound slightly arrogant. But I mean, you asked the question, so I'll answer with what I'm thinking. I think there was something in what I shared that provided hope for people, that they didn't have to wait until they had it figured out to start sharing, but mm-hmm. that maybe in the sharing was part of their healing. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that that's what people heard from my story, that I don't have it all together. I don't have it figured out. It's been a process where we're going on almost 10 years and I'm still learning. But I'm not being held captive by a narrative that I keep quiet. I'm trying to process it and name it. And I think that is why people said, "I just want to talk to you. I just want to share this with you." Like they wanted to get it out too. And I think that's powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It strikes me, Gino, that you're even your anticipated, like your body was anticipating the detractors and the blowback, and you know what I mean? Like you were ready yes. for that,
yeah.
which is, I think, part of the abuse, right? So part yeah. of the reason that people don't want to talk about this is that's what they're prepared to receive. Mm-hmm. And perhaps in hearing you dare, very sort of courageously to kind of like talk in, about this story in the honest ways, that you did. I can say more about that later, but like the way that you talked about it, I think was very helpful as well. You were honest about your experiences. You were honest about your feelings, but there wasn't like a vendetta. You weren't trying to make anybody pay, mm-hmm. that kind of a thing. So we could talk more about that later. But I think, it just strikes me that hearing somebody share and take the risk of like, "Ooh, here come the detractors," actually created this safe space for people to go, "Oh, maybe, maybe that guy's a safe person that, that I could actually share my story with, and he won't mm-hmm. argue with me about why it's, you probably overreacting. It's probably, oh, that can't have happened. Or I know that person. They're really nice. They would have never done that. Mm. You know, or all the things that we're used to hearing, I think. If anybody who's had any brush with abusive environments knows that that's just part of the game plan. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm just reflecting on that, I guess. That
yeah. Yeah, I also... Oh,
sorry, leaning into ahead. That. That's what... You leaning into that creates a safe space for others to feel like, oh, maybe I can share my story.
Yeah, I think that... And also some of the reflection and things that I heard were some people that heard the story and identified not as me in the story, but as other people in the story, as like the people that mm-hmm. remained silent while all of this went down, and that they had the wherewithal to kind of seek me out and say, I want to share with you what's happened as a result of that, that mm-hmm. I've confessed and I've sought forgiveness of those people years later because I saw myself in that part of the story. And so when I say like the emotional weight like that, I didn't think that was what that conversation was going to be about when I talked to that person. I thought it was going to be something else. And that moved me. So I think the last couple of weeks, I've spent a lot of time weeping over the brokenness and mm-hmm. in joy over just getting this stuff out there and reckoning with it. Is helping people, not just in a like I'm venting kind of way, though I think there's benefit of that,
yeah.
but just in that I'm not owned by my silence anymore. Yes. And maybe I can work with that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm struck too by something you said, you know, as you put this story out, your own story out, you were bracing for the people who, every time you try to tell the story, people argue with you about it, people try to re-script it for you or tell you how your perception is wrong or come to the defense of Frank or right. Mm-hmm. And it strikes me that like most people who've experienced abuse have so much fatigue about not being believed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That they're desperate for somebody whose first instinct won't be to gaslight them.
Yeah.
And so this is the freedom you give by telling your story is you signal to people, you communicate to people, I'm not going to disbelieve you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think people are desperate for that.
I think you're right. Like, I think I feel that. I feel that as you say it, that the thing that I longed to hear was someone to say like, hey, that wasn't right. But the best that I would often get, not every time, but most of the time when people heard this is, well, you know, it's a broken world. And you're like, that's not satisfying right now. No. That is not satisfying. It's true. It's not satisfying. And what it would stir up in me is this feeling of like, hey, I don't have a trail of bodies like this guy does. Like, there's not brokenness like that. I mean, there's not that I'm aware of in the same sense. And so then you're, well, now I'm getting prideful. Now I'm thinking I'm better than them. It's like, all I want is to be seen and heard and said like, hey, that wasn't right. And not, you're no better. That's not helpful. It's not helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a flight to the general and to the universal that's often like, you know, like a, it's like a fight or flight response, isn't it?
Yes.
When people hear about these things, it'd be interesting, I guess, to think about what kind of trauma might be embedded in our bodies, you know, that makes us immediately, even people, like you're saying, like these aren't necessarily people with any skin in the game in this particular church. They're just random people who are listening to this story, mm-hmm. but something comes online in them as soon as you tell this story that makes them not want to hear any more specifics about how you were hurt. And they just want to fly to the universal. Well, we're all sinners, or yeah, it's a broken world, or yeah, you know, forgiveness or something. You know, like we just so quickly try to like come up with something to say to just like make Gino stop saying the things that are making me really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of our, you know, probably part of our work is maybe just to notice what comes online in my body as I listen to Gino tell this story. You know, or as I listen to anybody tell a story of being hurt in any capacity.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture.
In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you, so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission, and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
This episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast is brought to you in part by Respero. Have you ever considered getting trained as a lay counselor? Respero has a way to make that happen. Respero offers the option to join a live cohort and participate in two courses led by Respero founder Joe Bishop. He has been counseling people for over 35 years. His hope is to train Respero counselors to bring healing and comfort to a broken and hurting world, one conversation at a time. If you're interested, the first step is taking the Understanding People course on Respero's website. Respero also offers courses and lessons for helping people understand themselves better or recover from grief or spiritual abuse. Respero has lessons centered on how to cope with disappointment, shame, addiction, and other topics. We believe Respero has something to offer everyone. Find them on social media at Respero Restoring Hope or online at Respero, RESPERO.org. We hope you will join with Respero on its mission to have healing conversations with people in a hurting world.
Yes. I had a conversation with Joe Bishop, founder Joe Bishop, who does all this training.
Yeah.
And he's a delightful guy.
Was it healing? Was it a healing conversation?
Well, it was it was a delightful conversation. We didn't really get into any counseling stuff, but as I was listening to you read that copy, I was like, you know what? I'd trust that guy to lead me through some training on being a lay counselor.
Yes.
So we would encourage you guys to check it out. Respero is, as we've said other times, not just, we don't let anybody just sponsor the podcast, but we want to partner with people who are seeking to do the same kind of work that we're seeking to do. And I think Respero is one of those organizations. So hope to check them out.
Yep.
You know, Ben, I don't think as a culture we do... We're not modeled, nor are we taught, nor do I really experience like the import. Like people don't tell me it's important to sit in the hurt with somebody. Mm-hmm. We want to numb it. We want to push it away. We want to like minimize it. And I think fix it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm wondering if people just responded to your story because you were willing to go there and to say something and to be honest and to be vulnerable. And that gave people courage to then be vulnerable and to be open with you. Mm-hmm. And then when someone is shown empathy, like when you're going back and forth and you're showing empathy, it's so powerful. And I think healing for the people who are in the midst of, man, this happened to me, or I experienced this, and they need that kind of compassion and empathy, and you showed it to them. Mm. And so I think you gave them the courage and the bravery to speak up and to be able to share part of their story, but then you also poured out your empathy and your compassion, and people needed that. Mm-hmm.
Mm. There's this dynamic, Christy, that I hope that that's what's happening. I'd like to think so. And there's this dynamic that I'm observing, and I wonder what you all think about this. All y'all think about this. That's everyone listening and you who are on the podcast. That the silence of there's so many leaders that I'm talking to that I didn't know had these same stories. People that I've been friends with for a while, and their way of handling this is to just move on from it. Right. So this thing is still active in their body and in their mind, When something happens, there's a narrative that they live by, like they were told they're no longer qualified or this is how they are. And that plays while they're trying to lead and care for people. Mm-hmm. And it's never mentioned. It's controlling us, but we don't deal with it. So we live with it. And then hearing this story, they're starting to name it. And the question I've been asking a lot of people is, does anyone around you know that there's this narrative playing in your head? And most of the time people are saying, no, no one knows this. I'm sharing it with you.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like there's a lot more work. I think that the reason they're starting to share is because they know that it's beginning to be safe to do that. That maybe there's a place that it's safe. But the thing that I desire is to offer like a prophetic hope for people. That it's not like you're doing things wrong, but something that's saying there's actually more good news for you as you work this through. That's what I'm experiencing, like this unfolding of good news.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I'm just reflecting on why it's so difficult, especially for leaders, to own and name some of these things. You know, they feel like they can talk to you about it, Gino, but not to the people who are closest to them, the people they're leading in their church, you know, that kind of a thing. And I think part of it is like the double bind that sometimes comes in situations like this, where to talk about it is to confirm the story. Like there's a story about talking about it, which is like you're not loyal. Well, I guess you don't have what it takes, or you can't handle it, or, you know, whatever it might be. And you just sort of like when you're in a situation, and just I'm reflecting on my own situations, some things that have happened to me in my life. And like part of the reason it's hard to share is it's just embarrassing. Like I feel like I felt like an idiot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like how could I let myself get sucked into this? You know what I mean? Like that's kind of how how did I not see this for so long? You know? So there's like this, there's this sort of embarrassment that we have. That's like, ugh, like, and the worry that does confirm that I'm not qualified to, you know what I mean? And so I think especially for a leader, there's a lot of risk. It feels really risky to name some of this stuff because it feels like, man, my whole life or my whole world, the way that I make my like living, it could all come crashing down if I even entertain the thought that maybe I should talk about this or maybe I can own this. It's really hard.
Yeah.
Gino, as we chatted about it a little bit, I called you to apologize for not intuiting that you did care for this. You mentioned to me that through these interactions and having told your story and then re-listened to yourself telling your story, there were some things that you realized you didn't say that you wanted to say, or realizations that you had made in the midst of this whole experience. Would you share those with us?
Yeah, I think, one was I thought that after we did the interview, I felt like this whole shame narrative, like you shouldn't have said that, you didn't say it right. And I didn't expect that. Like I went back into that and I thought, I probably didn't say things well. And when I heard the interview, I thought, actually, I said a lot of things that I was hoping to say, and which is good. And I got a lot of positive feedback from specifically the stuff we talked about, power dynamics and things like that. And I think that's what I wanted to make it really, really clear is that these things that have happened to people are wrong. And you're not wrong for having this happen to you. But you also can learn how to share this story in a way that isn't using power in a way to control other people too.
Yes.
And I wanted to make that clear. I wasn't sure if I made that clear. And I think that just having the whole response of sharing the story, feeling afterwards like, oh, I don't know if I said anything along those lines. And I'd love to just kind of work that out a little bit more with all of you and just saying like, hey, what's your experience with this? And what are you learning about power? Because I think this is a key issue in the church. There's so much that is like not good in the church, but the church is still the bride of Jesus. Like I love the church and I want to see her flourish, but I think we're not going to get anywhere if we don't understand how we're using power, unlike Jesus does.
Yeah. So I hear you naming there, Gino, that there is a possibility that as we're hurt by the illegitimate sort of use of worldly power in the church, we could perhaps inadvertently attempt to wield that same worldly power to hurt those who hurt us.
Yeah.
Right? In such a way. And so, you know, learning the difference then between you know, going on a vengeance vendetta, you know, and trying to hurt people who've hurt us. But also there's a difference between that and just staying silent and saying like, well, you know, forgiveness, you know, you need to forgive, which is like, well, that's actually, you know, actually to forgive, you have to be able to say that something was done that was wrong. You know? So actually the first part of forgiveness is to be able to name, you know, evil and sin as evil and sin. You have to name it as such, before forgiveness even makes any sense. So anyway, I don't know. I don't know if I have any reflections on it. I think you did, as I reflect on the interview, I think you did a good job of sharing it in such a way that you were telling the truth and attempting to sort of live in the power of the kingdom, the power of Jesus, kind of let the chips fall where they may rather than trying to make things happen or hurt people or drive an agenda, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to say that. You said it well, Ben. It's not that our response needs to be that we just are silent and walk away from it, accepting it, and because resistance can be vocal. That's not it, and that's the part that I feel like might not be clear. It's like, how do you respond to this? Because I think it's good to speak up and to speak out.
Yeah,
and like in hindsight of my situation, I wish I did some things differently. I particularly wish I did things differently, that now that my story's come out and I've heard from more people that had the same experience with the same person that I didn't know about. And I thought I knew everything. Like, I don't say that arrogantly. I had to do all this research and meet with people. And I thought, oh my gosh, this goes deeper. Maybe we need to speak up so that this isn't repeated. So I'm not saying that that's an abuse of power, but I am saying, like, how is this working in and through you?
Yeah, so it's like the practical outworking of your concern is, when I share my story about Frank, three other people told me similar stories about Frank. And if Frank still works at a church somewhere, what's our moral obligation to tell these stories about Frank so that there's less Genos? And in telling that story, are we just going to be wielding ungodly power in some way?
Yes.
Just cancel culture or something. You know what I mean? Like that kind of a thing.
Yes.
Christy, what are your thoughts on all this?
It's so interesting because I worked in an environment that I would say was abusive in power 15 years ago. And just this morning, I was in like a meeting with some coworkers that I had, and there was a disagreement between one of my friends and how we were going to run something, and he had one opinion and I had another, and we were talking about it, and it was not heated. It was totally respectful. It was there was not a power dynamic. We're like equal, like even in our how we're labeled or whatever at the church. Anyway, but what was stirring inside of me, my body was responding, because I was like, I'm going to lose. I'm like, there was this weird thing that was happening inside of me. And at one point in the meeting, he looked at me and he was like, are you okay? I'm sure he could tell, like, something changed. And I said, I think I'm going to need to think about why I'm responding the way that I am with you, because the story I'm telling myself in my head right now is not actually what's happening. And then I drove home. And then I got on this podcast with you. And and on my way home, I was thinking to myself, there's still healing that needs to happen from 15 years ago. And it makes me angry that it shows its ugly head in my relationship with my dear friend, who I don't believe was doing anything wrong or anything abusive or anything. But because of the residue of that, it's still on my heart and in my emotions and in my reactions.
Christy, that is so helpful to me, like just hearing you say it that way, because I think that's kind of what I'm trying to name, is that how do we respond to those situations so that we could have a new imagination for what's happening here?
Right.
And so you asking the question, which is so valuable to me, it's been so valuable to me, is like, it seems so simple, but why do I feel this way? Is the question that I ask myself now in situations where there feels like there might be conflict, or I feel like I might be being analyzed or something. Why do I feel this way? What narrative is playing here? And maybe that's part of, and maybe that's all of the healing that I'll ever get, is that I now know how to ask a question and it becomes more responsive, like why I feel this way. And then I can name it to people.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel this way because when I'm in this situation, this is what I think is happening. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that you, friend, are doing that,
right.
But that's how I feel. Yeah. And that's the reality we're working in right now.
So, right. Yeah. So here's what I'm thinking. Frank gets to do some shenanigans in Philly, and then Frank mm-hmm. gets to get on an airplane and fly to Idaho, let's just say, and start yeah. a new church. And nobody in Idaho knows Frank because he's from Philly, right?
Yeah.
300 years ago, 500 years ago, Frank's in Philly, you know, pulling yeah. a bunch of shenanigans. And it's much harder to get away.
Yeah.
And the community's much smaller. And here's what I'm... We've talked on this podcast before about whether or not healthy shame exists.
Mm.
I think it does.
Mm-hmm.
I think you having to be accountable to a community and the community holding you responsible for your actions and you feeling some embarrassment that you've mistreated people
yeah.
is a really good thing. Yeah. But we've got a situation now where if something goes wrong, we can split town pretty easily, right? And mm-hmm. start over again with no shame. Like mm-hmm. there's no sense of wrongdoing or feeling like I have wronged people and I'm unreconciled to them. And I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's good. That doesn't sound like yeah. it's good.
It doesn't sound like it's good to me either. I had the other response that I had to sharing this story was the thought that, is there a way that I can reach out to Frank and not say, hey, it's coming, like threatening or something like that, but simply like, hey, this is out there. There's more people that are kind of responding to this. And I think like today is the day of salvation, you know, like you can, and because my heart towards him is not one of wanting to see him crushed. I don't know how I got there, but that's not where I am.
Yeah. I think that's going to be contextual too every time, right? Every situation. Because you were talking earlier, Gino, about you didn't know how to care for yourself when you were listening to all these stories. You know, there is such a thing as vicarious trauma, and you know, it's, you know, anybody who's like chaplains, you know, that kind of they all know about this, where it's just like, none of this is happening to me, but it's hard not to bring this stuff home with me when I'm done with a day's work.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I'm reflecting on that because for some people's self care might be, I can't talk to this person. Like I can't, the power dynamic is still there. I don't trust them, you know, whatever, that kind of a thing. You might be able to talk to Frank and that might be a helpful thing for you. But I was just reflecting, like, I think that's why Christy, I think your example is such a good one of, I think the basic skill that we need to learn in situations like this is paying attention to how we're feeling, paying attention to the stories we're telling ourselves, you know, about that feeling and what's happening in our bodies so that we don't just end up projecting this stuff onto every other relationship that I have, you know, every disagreement becomes this, you know, fight to the death. And it's, but you have the wherewithal to say, oh, wait, this is weird. I don't know. Why do I feel this way? Like I have to stop here. And then Gino, you can do the same thing when it's like, maybe I should call Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I want to call Frank? What am I hoping for here? You know what I mean? And you're in touch enough with, I don't really want him to like crush him. Okay. So maybe my motivations are in order here. Maybe I can love him if I speak to him, but that just takes some self-knowledge. And I think it takes some, we got to do some work. You know what I mean? Yeah. Some emotional work to sort through this stuff. It takes time and it takes attention and you have to choose to pay attention to it rather than, you know, ignore it.
Well, and I think it's like when we pay attention to it, it opens our eyes to areas that God wants to heal and change in us.
Yeah.
And the more we can pay attention to that, the more we can be honest and vulnerable about how we're feeling and what's going on inside of us, I think the bigger the opportunity for real transformation to happen for us.
Yeah. It seems like we experience that every time we are, well, especially with abuse, we experience every time we're vulnerable or honest about how we're feeling, that that's used against us.
Yes.
And we're saying, let's maybe flip that to say that this is actually used for you. Yes. This isn't just like purging, but it's a process of learning to reckon with what you've experienced, that is real and harmful and bad, and that by naming this, you might be moving out of that into something that actually frees other people up to meet you in reality too.
Right. Right. It's not just for you.
Yeah.
I mean, like we, you know, one of our axioms is that whatever God does in us, he also does through us, and whatever he does through us, he also does in us. And so there's this cohesive fabric that, you know, we actually participate in the salvation of the world when we, you know, care for ourselves, when we find healing, that kind of thing. It's not just for us as individuals, but it allows us to be a node or a conduit, if you will, of healing for other people. Like we can actually be that for other people if we can find it for ourselves, if we can lean into that for ourselves.
Yeah.
There's really no other way of doing that for others unless you yourself can encounter, you know, that healing love in your own life.
Yeah, that axiom, the first time that I was introduced to it, the sub-axiom, like character over competency, that's part of that process. And you reproduce who you are, was very liberating in the sense that I would much rather be part of a church culture where everyone can be known for what actually is happening in their hearts and heads at that moment.
Yeah.
Than that we perform in the way that makes us seem accepted and improved.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reflection from sharing is that I'm hearing from people that are saying, this is what I'm known for, but here's what's going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And me feeling like this overwhelming desire to say, I want you to be set free from that. I really want to see like you feel that the things that you desire for your church can't actually happen while you're still like performing and not living.
Yeah.
But more than that, like in this situation, it's like the things that God is trying to do through you and in you are being stifled by your fear. And that's not the way of Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Other things we're learning, Gino or Christy and Ben?
Well, I'm learning that I thought that I understood the value of presence, but I think I understand it a little more deeply, especially
more
in a pandemic.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Say more about that. I'm curious to hear what you mean.
I think that the inclination to listen to people and be with them while they're sharing things is most of the work. And I think sometimes there's a fear that we won't know what to say. We won't respond perfectly. But I think that as I reflect on my own story, it's not a matter of all of those things. I don't necessarily want advice. I want to be heard. And I want to be told that, I'm listening, gonna care. And so being present with people as they share has been, it's validated that thought for me, that I think that's important, but now I know it's important in deeper ways of just being with people and being for them. And I still have a few Zoom calls to schedule with people and to work through. And, and I think there's something to this. I think that if you're listening and you want to be heard, I think we'd like to figure out how we could listen better and for you.
Yeah.
I know I would. I won't speak for everyone. I think you all would too.
No, yes. I would too. You know what strikes me about that, Gino? I've been thinking about how so many things in the kingdom they're both easy and hard. They're hard in the sense that it goes against everything that we've, like everything our culture tells about what life is all about. And you know what I mean? Like it feels risky for all the reasons that we've already talked about. It feels really risky to trust that the kingdom is a more firm reality than the stories that we tell ourselves about how I got to keep performing and I got to keep hustling and I got to make sure everybody thinks I'm awesome and smart or funny or whatever. Like all those stories, like, so it's hard in the sense that it really does demand that you trust that God is real and what Jesus says is true. But in the other sense, it's easy because like it doesn't require any skill. You know what I mean? So I'm just struck by like listening, like listening to people. I actually don't need much skill at all to just shut up, you know, for a couple seconds and just listen and like take in what you're saying and like let it land on me. Like children can do this. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't take, like repentance is the same way. It's easy. Like all I have to do is like be willing to be wrong and say that you're wrong. Mm. It doesn't take any particular skill. You don't have to grow into it.
But when you say that, I think the key is you're taking it in.
Yeah.
Right. So often people talk and it's just like in one ear and out the other, and we're not actually present with people.
Yeah.
Mm. And when we take it in, then it often, at least for me, because I'm emotional, it does something, right? Just the other day I was talking to a woman who was sharing that it was the anniversary of a miscarriage that she had. Mm. And she had just kind of been at a place where she could share that with somebody, and I just happened to be with her, and so she shared it and she started crying, and I sat there and I started crying. And I think it's because I took it in.
Yeah.
Like the pain and the grief that she was experiencing, I started to feel and just wanted to sit with her. Yeah. And I just, a confession, I'm hurried. Like I live a hurried life. So when someone tells me something, I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then I just move on. Right. But to really sit with someone, to really hear, to really listen is love, I think. Yeah. And that's what I think you've experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the hard part, right? The hard part is like laying aside this agenda, all these are the things that I have to do.
Right.
But like the easy part is, all you have to do is, you know, like, listen, all you have to do is, okay. So I think the hard part is like mostly not doing what we have, you know, compulsively convinced ourselves we need to do. And the easy part is just like letting this happen right now, you know, so just listen.
I think that I'm always convicted. I may have shared this in the past with you, but I'm always convicted by the unhurriedness of Jesus. I find that to be like so unlike me and so challenging. And he's going to heal the synagogue official's daughter. And he stops because someone in a crowd touches his clothing and heals this woman. If I'm a disciple, I'm like, come on, let's get moving. What do you mean, who touched you? Like, there's a crowd of people. Let's go. We've got things to do and people to see, and they're important, and you have time for this. And I think that there is something to that of saying that not just I'm going to be present, but I'm going to get involved in it. Like, I'm going to be really present. I don't know even how else to say it other than, I think we minimize what presence means by saying like, I'm showing up, but it's actually coming into this story and feeling those feelings and then seeing that with people. It's powerful. It's really powerful.
Well, that's great.
It is. I have thoughts in my head about the profound impact of empathy when someone has been, when someone has experienced abuse, and they feel joined and connected by somebody else who willingly enters into their pain with them. And I'm also in touch with how people like Frank and others seem to lack the fundamental ability to perceive how others perceive them and care about it
Yes.
And I'm just noticing that there is how important empathy maybe is in a therapeutic or interpersonal sense, but then how I have other friends who are more in activistic work, and they are very skeptical of empathy. Meaning empathy gets weaponized and used, like, you know, against people who are hurting. You just think about how hard, it is for this person. And if you really knew how hard it was for them, you wouldn't be so hard on them for hurting you, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I'm thinking about that as you guys chat. I'm also thinking about, you mentioned maybe we can close with this, Gino, since we're kind of getting along here. You mentioned having thoughts about reaching out to Frank.
Yeah.
Hey, Frank, I'm telling our story. Mm-hmm. If they decide to put it on a LP, you want to sign it with me? You know, those kinds of conversations can be difficult. And I want to ask you, did you reach out to Frank? And if you didn't, why not?
I haven't. And why not? Because I'm the most transparent answer is I'm not sure about my motivation yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Like, yeah, you mean you might have a motivation that's untoward?
Yes. I mean, the balance of power is shifting in the truth of his story, you know, in the sense of who's believing that and who's behind it. Over the years, those people, you know, what I didn't share, one of the other things I didn't share is when I moved back to Philadelphia, most of the people that had turned against us came back and asked for forgiveness, you know, and said that they had the same experience after, or they were wrong and they hurt us. Hmm. They heard different narratives. I mean, it was literally like 7 to 10 people that we were reconciled with in the course of 2 weeks moving back to Philly about 6 years ago.
Wow.
And after, you know, a couple of years of just silence. So I think that there isn't the support there. And then I'm thinking, like, are my motivations on to see, you know, the truth came out? Or is it, hey, I think now is really a good time for you to reconsider and us to be reconciled.
Yeah. The reason I asked about that is because I think that often people who've experienced maybe abuse within power differentials, spouses or people who work at churches or kids with their parents, etc., they're often in a very unhelpful way. Matthew 18 is held over their heads.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oof.
And so I want to be clear, and I didn't hear you say this, but we don't control how people hear things, but I want to be clear that Gino and I and Christy and Ben, we are not holding Matthew 18 over your heads here. And I would just caution any move towards somebody who's hurt you, I would just caution doing that without bringing in people who are as powerful or more so than they are. Don't put yourself back in an environment and in a relationship where abuse and trauma has happened by yourself. That's not Matthew 18.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's not Matthew 18. And I just want to, I know some of our, that's been used to gaslight us or to, as a lever to get us to actually go against our conscience. Like we willingly put ourselves in harm's way because we think we're obeying scripture. Mm-hmm. And I want to just release the listener from that and to say it's usually way more complicated in these situations than Matthew 18 applies to.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for saying that. That is a really good word.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much that Matthew 18 implies or assumes, right? That this is a brother, that there's, you know, like there's, and that there's some sort of elders that you can talk to, right? There's some authority that you all agree that you're under. You know what I mean? Like in so many of these situations, none of those things are present. There's already a power differential between the people and there's no authority to appeal to, you know what I mean? And so, I think it's tenuous to apply Matthew 18 in a flat way in these kinds of situations.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yep.
For sure.
Gino, can you just tell us, people want to share their story and you've heard their story. Yeah. So give us some hope. What are you hoping that our communities can be like?
It's a great question. Well, one thing is I hope that we can continue to have opportunities to hear from people. If you're listening to this podcast, I know that earlier I kind of shared my response or reaction in my unpreparedness to hear the stories. That's not to be confused with my unwillingness, with being unwilling to hear stories. I want to hear stories, and I want to hear from people. I want to sit with people and be present, and I'd love to create spaces where maybe we could share our stories, those who are listening in. I'd call it like a brave space. I'm not sure there's such a thing as safe space, but we can be brave together and see what could transpire. I'm really struck by the need for good news. It's kind of my wiring that I want to move to the fun, the joy, the happiness in that, but not in some shallow therapeutic sense. I really want to hear what is operating. What are the stories that we're telling ourselves so that we can speak good news to that? Because I do think that there's hope. I do think there's hope for the church and for people, but it requires us to be in that space together to move to that. And I think that the last thing I'd say is that the good news is proclaimed. And sometimes it's not sufficient for our bad news to just say it to ourselves over and over again. We need to hear someone say it. We're meant for community. And so I'd like to see us create that space. I'm not exactly sure what it looks like, but I'd be willing to pursue that with others.
I love that, awesome. Gino. Brave space. That's good. It's good for our listeners to be able to reach out and have that with you. But also, I think I'm hearing you say to do that within our own communities. Be a brave space for the people around you.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yes.
Gino, do you want people to email you?
Yes.
What's the best way to get in touch? Yeah.
Yeah, please email me if there's interest. We'll set something up for sure.
All right. It's gino@gravityleadership.com. And we'll see what kind of brave space we can create. I'm excited about all of that. So, and I'm thankful for you, Gino. I'm thankful for your bravery of kind of turning Gravity Leadership Podcast into a brave space, for you telling your story and all the goodness that has opened up for people, even though it's maybe difficult. It has been for you. I'm sure it has been for those who've had to relive memories and think about trauma that's still embedded in their bodies, but this is really good work, and I'm grateful for your testimony that has opened this up.
Thank you.
All right. Well, email Gino if you want to find out what this brave space could look like, or if you just want to talk, just want to share your story with him. Thanks for being open to do that.
Thanks, Gino.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebby, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.